You know, in the case of a typical brahmachari or a typical sannyasi, the demands of the body and the activities for the body are minimized. And most of his time and energy is saved for his spiritual practices of hearing, chanting, and remembering, especially. But when one is a householder, he has more responsibilities in relation to the body and society. He has to take care of his wife and his children, and therefore the proportion of time and energy spent on the conditional activities increases compared to the time and energy spent on the constitutional activities of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, and so on. But even a brahmachari, and maybe more particularly a sannyasi, when he preaches and establishes a preaching mission or becomes part of a preaching mission, he also accepts many responsibilities in relation to society. For example, when Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Hare Krishna Land in Juhu, Bombay, he directly and indirectly through us undertook many activities in relation to the world. He had to negotiate with the owner of the land, and then there were legal complications, then he had to deal with the municipality to get the permission to build, and then he had to deal with the contractors and the suppliers. So there were many activities meant for the service of the Lord and the pleasure of the Lord, which were not constitutional in the sense that they were not hearing and chanting and remembering as devotees do both in the material world and the spiritual world. They were conditional in the sense that they related to conditions in the material world, that you need, you know, bricks and cement, you need a contract, you need permits, you need so many things in the material world, and to get them you deal with the material world. So a devotee has to be careful to balance, you know, the constitutional activities with the conditional activities, even when the conditional activities are related to spreading Krishna consciousness. And even, you know, very good devotees, when they deal too much with the material world in the course of trying to spread Krishna consciousness, and do not spend enough time in the association of devotees hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, they can be affected by the material energy. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada says that the devotee should be very careful, or the devotee is very careful, to maintain his wholesome condition. Now, sometimes we say, and it is true, that in order to preach, we have to take risks. In India, the tradition was that a sannyasi should not cross the ocean. because the people across the ocean were considered fallen. And if a sannyasi were to cross the ocean and deal with them, there was a chance that he would be affected. So Srila Prabhupada took the risk. He crossed the ocean. He went to New York City. He lived on the Bowery. But because he was not only strong, but also careful, he was able to maintain his spiritual position. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would encourage his disciples in the same way, to take risks for the sake of helping others. But once one young disciple went from Bombay to South Africa to preach. He was perhaps the first devotee, or one of the first devotees who went to South Africa to preach. And he started to go to the beach, and because of lack of association, he became lax in his spiritual practices and enamored of, you know, the sun and surf, natural beauty and healthy pleasures there. So after some time he came back to Bombay, and Srila Prabhupada told him how, you know, how much anxiety he had been in about him. And he said that whenever he sends his preachers to a new place, he's in anxiety about them. But then again, preaching is so important. And then Prabhupada quoted Lord Krishna, you know, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, that Krishna himself comes to the material world to preach. So preaching is such an important activity that even Krishna himself comes to preach. And therefore Krishna says that one who preaches his message is his dear most servant. And there will never be one as dear to the Lord as the preacher. And in the end, he will go back home, back to Godhead. But in order to preach, the preacher must deal with conditioned souls, by definition. And further, when he develops a preaching mission or institution, he has to deal with the material world in other ways as well. And therefore, there's some risk that the conditional activities, if they're not balanced by enough constitutional activities, will temporarily at least draw the person more and more into the material world, you know, to the point that the person is not able to maintain his strict spiritual practices. He may just well, it's a combination, but he'll become weak. He'll become weak, and when he's weak, he may fall down temporarily. But even then, because Krishna knows that his actual desire was to serve Krishna and preach and help others, Krishna within the heart you know, will purify him and help him to come back to the proper standard. But we, from our side, should be careful. We take risks, but we should not take bad risks. You know, we should assess the risk, you know, and you know, try to maintain our spiritual practices even in the material world. And you know, the principle is basically the same. Although the duties of the preacher are more important from a spiritual point of view, in one sense, but even then the duties of the householder are also important, because, you know, Srila Prabhupada wanted ideal devotees to show the example to others in all stations of life, and therefore he wanted ideal householders, and most of the world will be householders. They are householders, and they will be householders. And therefore, Prabhupada wanted householder devotees to show other householders how they can be Krishna conscious, but at the same time have wife and family and work and so on. So even there, the same principle applies. You know, they have to spend time with, I'm speaking from the male's point of view, but I could, you know, the same principle applies to everyone, but speaking from the male's point of view, he has to spend time with his wife, he has to spend time with his children. He may have to do things with them to please them that are not directly Krishna conscious. And then, of course, he'll have to work and earn money and pay bills. I mean, it could be the husband or the wife. But the same principle applies, that he'll want to make sure that he has enough of the constitutional activities of hearing and chanting and remembering and the association of devotees, especially more advanced devotees, that he can continue with his conditional activities without his constitutional activities being disturbed. But even then, if he becomes too entangled in meeting the challenges of the material world in the course of his conditional activities, still Krishna's in his heart. Krishna knows that he's a devotee, and Krishna will help him come back to the path. So that's why whatever condition we're in, if we're devotees, even if accidentally we fall down, you know, Krishna's in our heart, and he'll help us. And others should not deride a devotee for such a fall down, because he is a devotee, and that's what Krishna sees. And, you know, whatever the defects are, we should see them just like spots on the moon and not take them seriously.
Anyone else has a question from the heart?
Are we to assume then that people that are in royalty today were formerly of Krishna consciousness and then took a higher birth in their other body? The Queen of England.
Rose is asking if birth in a royal family is an indication of practice of Krishna consciousness in one's past life on the basis of Suchinam Shimatam Gehe. We can say for sure that the person has performed pious activities, because the result of pious activities is material opulence. Now, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as quoted by Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, has said that there are actually three kinds of pious activities. Karmonmukha Sukriti, or pious activities that lead to material enjoyment. And then there are pious activities that lead to impersonal liberation. And there are pious activities that lead to devotional service. I think that in the case of some of the great kings of India, we can say that they had performed devotional service because in the next life they continued devotional service. Because that's, I mean, one part of the assertion of Lord Krishna is that the fallen yogi will take birth in a rich family or a pious family. But the other part is that in the next life he will continue the process of devotional service. He'll be naturally attracted to the principles of yoga. So we see such cases in the history of India. Then again, taking birth in a rich family, also, it's a facility because a person doesn't have to worry about his physical maintenance so much. So if he wants to practice Krishna consciousness, he's more free to do so. But the other side of it is that he may be allured by the material opulence and forget Krishna consciousness. So whether a person born in a wealthy family has taken birth there just because of past material pious activities or not cannot really be seen. But if he takes advantage of the situation to make further progress in Krishna consciousness, then we may conclude that he performed devotional service in the past life. And if he doesn't make further progress, most likely he just performed material pious activities, but there is a chance that he did perform some devotional service, but taking birth in all the opulence, he forgot the spiritual purpose of life. And again, it temporarily, for one lifetime or however many, became diverted from the path.
Well, now on the other extreme, there have been people in many past years where the popes have engaged in warfare and have been responsible for killing people. Now, these popes who are engaged in devotional service in their time, yet they acted as soldiers in the act of war. And then there are people like Hitler, who achieved great power He had everything he ever wanted, and yet he was evil.
Yes, well, one, I mean, powerful demons, I mean, any powerful person has performed austerities. You know, Hiranyakasipu performed austerities, you know, standing on his toes and holding his arms upraised. So anyone who performs austerities will get powers. And if he's a devotee, he'll use the powers for the good of others, and if he's a demon, he'll use the powers for his own benefit at the expense of others. So we do come to the point that we can't really conclude that someone who has power was a devotee, because his power may have been achieved by his austerities, but his austerities could have been done outside of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but a lowly man like Hitler, who was came from a very insignificant family and reached such power. He had everything in the world that he wanted. And he was very satisfied with his life. Why is he granted in his next life? Does he become an animal?
I doubt it.
Not even an animal.
I think a germ is more likely.
I have a question. What is the position of someone who falls into the mistake of enjoying Krishna consciousness as opposed to, I was just reading about this in the 11th canto, somebody who is chanting and is in having a state of enjoyment instead of a humble state of, I didn't understand the position of someone who's, because they're chanting, they're hearing the pastimes. And where, what is that line of experiencing the bliss of it and the enjoying mentality? And then what's the position of that person? Are they still getting some benefit?
Well, they would be getting benefit. I mean, I don't know the context of the question, so I can't answer properly.
I'm being completely confused years ago in the 11th, and thinking, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to be enjoying, well, not with our material senses, but I mean, with our transcendental sound vibration.
I mean, without reference to the passage in Srimad Bhagavatam, I can say that once Gurudas Prabhu told Srila Prabhupada that he liked playing the kartals in the kirtan, and, you know, wasn't that sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada answered, there's two kinds of sense gratification, material and spiritual. And since you're playing the kartals for Krishna, it's spiritual sense gratification.
So they, I'm reading the Mahabharata, I'm like really enjoying it. I mean, totally as if it were, you know, an exciting novel I had read, you know, a long time ago. You know.
That's good.
But
that's
that,
good.
And when I was reading that, and I thought, am I just enjoying it at the expense of, you know, I didn't, it was hard to understand that. You know, how do you define the mentality of that? So is that then, is that spiritual enjoyment? As long as
yeah, I mean, I would say so. I would say so. I mean, we can't, it's like with an ordinary novel or, you know, a movie, we can get vicarious enjoyment through the hero or heroine. Or even the other way, you know, we can, you know, have vicarious lamentation through the hero or the heroine. Like there's the story of one woman who cried through the whole Ramayana. And at the end, she said, I also had a son who left home. So she was hearing the Ramayana, but she wasn't completely hearing purely, but she was sort of, you know, things in the Ramayana were reminding her about her own life. And therefore, you know, one could not say that the experience she had was purely spiritual. But at the same time, you know, we want to continue hearing the scriptures in the association of devotees, even if our response is not completely pure. Because by continued hearing, we will be purified. So even if we think, well, you know, our hearing is not completely pure, still we should continue.
Discussion reminds me of something I read where a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that he felt he shouldn't desire to go back to Godhead because it was a selfish desire for his own pleasure that he would be able to go back to the spiritual world and enjoy, you know, bliss with Krishna. And so he was questioning Srila Prabhupada, you know, is this improper that I should desire to go back to Godhead because it's a selfish desire? But Srila Prabhupada said, you know, at the stage that the devotee was, they should desire very much to go back to Godhead. And then when they actually become fully purified, then they'll desire only what Krishna desires, and so it will not even be an issue, you know, whether they're in the material world or the spiritual world. But,
yeah, that's a very important point. That we shouldn't try to imitate a devotee on a higher level. In Bhakti Rasamrita, Sindhu Rupa Goswami mentions six characteristics of pure devotional service, and one is moksha lagatukrit, which means that it minimizes the value of liberation. And two of the six characteristics are prominent in sadhana bhakti, two are prominent in bhava bhakti, and two are prominent in prema bhakti. So moksha lagata krit really becomes prominent in bhava bhakti, which is the stage of liberation. So when one is at the stage of liberation, he has no desire for liberation because he's already liberated. Maybe from another point of view, Srila Prabhupada said that, well, it's in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, that the Prabhupada paraphrased it, that one who's in a devotee who's influenced by the mode of ignorance thinks, you know, I'm the only devotee, I'm the only one who's doing any service around here, everyone else is bogus. And someone influenced by the mode of passion will think, you know, I want to become the best devotee, I want to be known as the best devotee. And someone in the mode of goodness will think, I want to go back home, back to Godhead. And one who's transcendentally situated will think, I just want to please Krishna. So generally we're coming from some position in the modes of nature, and probably there's, in the beginning, there's influence of the lower modes. So just to have the desire to want to go back to Godhead is good. It's actually good to desire to go back to Godhead. So we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't try to imitate a devotee on a higher level. We should sort of accept our desire to go back to Godhead and try to do all the things we have to do to get there.
So is pleasing Krishna the first requisite?
Yeah, well, the definition of devotional service is, you know, to cultivate activities for the pleasure of Krishna. And the definition applies, you know, in sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. But it's fulfilled, you know, perfectly in bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. Especially bhakti. Like the fact that the disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, or the fact that one of the devotees here raised the question, means that they don't want to be liberated for the sake of personal enjoyment. They really want to do what pleases Srila Prabhupada and Krishna, and therefore they're asking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that means that the true spirit of devotion is there. You know, they just want to do what pleases Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And if enjoying, you know, hearing Krishna's pastimes won't please Krishna, then they want to know. You know, or if desiring to go back to Godhead won't please Guru and Krishna, they want to know. So that means that the ultimate goal is to please Guru and Krishna, and therefore they're counted as devotees.
And one can pick that up at any time in their lifetime.
Oh, yes.
At any time.
Yes.
Even those just before their death.
Yes.
And at any age, and regardless of their past activities.
Yes. They're saying there's too much hot air in the room, so time to stop.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you for watching.